Live from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank, the bank that specializes in understanding you. It's time for North Fulton Business Radio.
And hello again, everyone. Welcome to another edition of North Fulton Business Radio. We are broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studio inside Renaissance Bank on Windward Parkway in Alpharetta. And I have been wanting for a year to say we're broadcasting live from inside Renaissance Bank. We're glad to be back, folks. Here's what did not change over the last year, though, is the great service that Renaissance Bank gives small business customers. So if you're one of those small business, medium-sized business, even a larger-sized business, I happened to talk to one the other day that they're just tired of the big bank experience. And you know what I mean. A 1-800 number, an automated computer voice, can't get in touch with a real person. If you're tired of all that, well, here's my suggestion. Go to renaissancebank.com, find their local office. They've got some 200 across the South ready to serve you, in addition to this one on Windward Parkway in Alpharetta, and give them a call. And guess what? A live person will answer the phone, or you'll get a live person's voicemail and they'll call you back. And they'll make an appointment with you and have you come on in and explain what your issue is and what you need for your business. And I think you'll be glad you did that, folks. Renaissance Bank, understanding you, member FDIC. And folks, we got two great guests today. We've got Elisa Goodwin, and she is with Mission Hope, and Stacy Georges, and Stacy is with Special Needs Respite. Elisa, Stacy. Welcome.
Thank you.
Thank you, John.
Yeah, it's great to have both of you. Elisa, let's start with you. And you are the executive director of Mission Hope, right?
Correct.
Let's talk a little bit about Mission Hope. How are you serving folks out there?
Let's do it.
Yep.
We serve in remote areas of the world. So places that no one knows about. No one's helping them. They're in the most desperate circumstances. And we're a Christian organization, so our heart goes out to the brokenness of body and spirit, as well as not knowing Jesus. So unreached, remote, no one's helping them. And we're going in those spaces, and we're bringing hope. We're working through the local leaders, and we're helping them to create sustainable solutions for their most desperate needs.
Wow. A lot there. Mm-hmm. Let's talk, how remote is remote? Let's talk about that first.
Well, say, for example, in Nicaragua, you have to take one plane to get to the main city. Then you take another plane to get to a remote area. Then you take a boat that takes you about 6 to 8 hours to get to the main base camp, which is remote, to then get to even more remote areas. So it's pretty, it's pretty remote.
Wow. Yeah. And I can see how there's a whole lot of need there, right?
Absolutely.
How do you find the areas that you work in and those needs that you address?
So there are unreached areas that are actually identified. You can find them on various websites if you're curious about it. And then we work with a lot of organizations where, for example, think of ones that really want to work in larger areas that maybe aren't willing to commit to 3 to 7 years, which we are, until we see the sustainable solutions happening. And so we sometimes hear about these opportunities through other orgs that say, we'd love to be here. We can't. Here's a spot you might be interested in. So there are a lot of different ways we find it. And then we still need to vet it, meet with a handful of local leaders or an entity that's there and make sure we're aligned, that they don't want a handout. They want a hand up. And then we get the ball rolling, evaluating what the needs are.
So you said something there that I think is really important. There's a helping, mm-hmm. right? But then there's transforming so that you can allow someone to move on and grow themselves in their own community mm-hmm. without the perpetual help, right?
Exactly.
And that's what I heard in what you just said.
Exactly right.
Yeah. Expand on that if you would.
Well, you know, it's always broken my heart to see even people who are experiencing homelessness and knowing, you know, I could give you a dollar and you could have food for the moment, but how's that going to overcome your long-term need? Mm-hmm. And so that's always resonated in my heart. And one of the reasons why I was so drawn to this organization was because we're seeking solutions through the local leaders to equip them to be the solution for their own issues so that we can step away and it will continue. And so we literally provide them with these tablets and questionnaires, and they go in and talk to each individual person in a community, in a village. And then we work with them to evaluate the responses and identify those issues that are most urgent and that we're able to help them with. So a lot of times it's malnutrition. It's not having money because they don't know how to market their agricultural goods, which oftentimes in these remote villages is one of the few resources that they have. It's teaching them how to save. It's helping them with microenterprise so that they can learn how to leverage their crops and other resources so that they can truly thrive. And then it's looking at root causes for some of the issues, particularly against the vulnerable. So whether it's sex trafficking, domestic violence, early child marriage, we're seeking to uncover what's really, besides the cultural depravity that exists and some of the beliefs that are very unhealthy, we're seeking to identify some of the roots. And can I share an example with
Please.
You real quickly?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So when we went into a village in Bali, and it was a very remote part of Bali, so not the surfing area, it's the village far, far away on the opposite side of the volcano that you want to be on, where there's no water 7 months of the year. So we go into this community, 12 villages, total of about 12,000 people, and 20% of the young girls are missing. We explore that and find out that they've been sex trafficked. And the reason being, the primary reason, besides the fact that in a lot of these cultures, they diminish the value of women, but during those 7 months of drought, they pay exorbitant amounts of money for a water truck that will go up and down this volcano. And the higher you are on the volcano's peak, you know, the closer to it, the more you're going to pay. And so they go into great debt. They borrow from loan sharks. There's no way they can pay it back. The loan shark comes to them and says, pay. They say, I can't. And they say, well, give us your daughters. We'll take them to the city and they can earn the money to pay off your debt. Mm. And they go into sex trafficking.
Wow.
So we knew one of the root issues was the need for clean water. Mm-hmm. So we were able to, they had a plan. They knew there was a clean water lake on the opposite side of this volcano, but no one would help them, not even, you know, the Balinese officials. And so we were able to raise the money, mobilize the people to invest the sweat equity, work through some local engineers as well as partners and ourselves. And now they have clean water all year round. And so they don't get in that situation again where they're in debt due to that. So that's just one way. And you know, our desire, if you think about it, a lot of organizations are not diminishing the value, but you'll give $50 so that people can eat, so that they can go to school. But our desire is give us that $50 for the year for one person, and that will help us equip that village so that they can thrive and they're not dependent on us month after month.
Yeah, and again, to underline what you said, nobody's diminishing emergency, the help for emergency need.
Exactly. And by the way, we do some disaster relief. When mm-hmm. you talk about emergency, we absolutely do that. And that's another way that, you know, one, you can overcome the immediate need, build a relationship so that you can work with them on sustainable solutions. And honestly, as a Christian organization, you see where people are a lot more open to the gospel when they really need to have hope and they need a hand up. And mm-hmm. so it's a great opportunity also to share with them hope in Christ.
For sure. For sure. And I think the other thing that draws me to what you're talking about, Elisa, is that you, so many times we in the West, we have our own ideas about what we should be doing for other people, particularly in cultures like that, right? And so going in and asking questions and being inquisitive and saying, what is it that you need, because you know how to define your own needs for of your community. That's pretty awesome work.
Thank you. Yeah, the local leaders that we work with feel that sense of respect. We're colleagues, we're collaborators, and we're empowering them, and they know that. So their perception and their sense of what's going on is truly valuable. And they're the ones that are going to continue it when we're gone. And they understand what the commitment is. We have a theory of change model that shows what the inputs are and the outcomes that we expect before we're going to leave. So there's a real clarity on the objectives and an accountability that we have to these folks. But there's nothing more beautiful than knowing that here's the example with the water. So they don't think it's a Western world solution to water because they invested the sweat equity and now they've established committees in this community to charge just the smallest amount to each villager so that they can continue to maintain the pipe system. And they've also identified the people that have the greatest need for it to be closer to them because they're going too far to reach the water. And so they've added to the piping system for certain locations along the volcano. So they own it. And that brings them a lot of joy because they don't feel like someone is, kind of dismissing the value that they can bring to it. It's incredible when you empower people and equip them. They've got the know-how for a lot of this, even though we don't always believe that they do. And so it's really cool to see them thrive and flourish in who they are.
So in that case, it becomes not just about fresh water and avoiding sex trafficking of young women, but it's empowering an entire community to have a totally different perception of what they're capable of.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Wow. Elisa Goodwin is with us, folks. She's the president and CEO of Mission Hope. So, Elisa, let's talk a little bit about how folks can, what do you need? I mean, what are you looking for in terms of engagement from the folks that are listening to this show?
Well, the obvious answer that most nonprofits will say is financial support. And certainly that's true with us because it does cost money to do this work. But in addition to that, we really would love to have people with talents that they want to invest in the work. For example, if you're a great photographer and maybe you're successful, but you feel like, man, I wish I could use this for, some good, for something that I believe in. Well, we could really use a photographer to go to one of these areas and capture the stories for us. So we need storytellers, videographers, people who have business acumen and are interested in helping us develop business plans on some of the micro enterprise opportunities that we have. Someone that's really great at IT that wants to invest in, helping a nonprofit. Because we try to stay lean on the administrative side, having volunteers that can fill some of those gaps is huge. So when I say we need volunteers, we genuinely would love to have volunteers with some of these talents. And I didn't even list all of them. So there's that. And then there are things like being part of praying for the ministry, maybe someone who wants to help connect with some of the local leaders and encourage them. So we've talked to some women groups about encouraging some of the women local leaders. They have a particularly difficult situation in that not only is it hard to be a local leader, in a culture that is struggling and in an area that's very remote, but then there are also, local leaders who, because they're women, have an uphill battle because they're not getting the respect from particularly the men in the village. So to have other women who can pour into them and encourage them is huge. So I would say if you have a heart to serve through our organization, I am 99.9% sure that I can come up with a way that will encourage and bless you and bless the organization and the people we serve.
Great words. Now, Lisa, I want to just take a little travel down a bunny trail. You have not always been involved in this nonprofit. Talk about your background and what led you to Mission Hope.
Sure. So I was a banker for, I don't know, about 24 years. I was a bank exec when I left, thought I'd be the next bank president, worked for the same president for 17 years. And Then as I didn't lose my passion, but I just, you know, I'm a Christian and I was just feeling more, more of a passion to seek God because I'd gotten so wrapped up in work. I kind of had put him to the side. And as I pursued him more and I said, God, if you ever want me to leave ministry, just make it clear because otherwise I have no intention of leaving. And then he made it clear. And, you know, when you open yourself up for surrender, just don't be surprised if something happens that totally changes your life around.
Right.
And so I only applied to one nonprofit when I left the bank and then was pursuing, you know, other jobs in the financial industry. Sure, he just wanted me to go to a different place. And that organization ended up being my first job in nonprofit. And with Mission Hope in 2013, I had this heart that was just broken for those who were in the most desperate situations and didn't have help and didn't know Jesus, because I know it's a life changer for me and knowing God. I mean, it's totally changed my perspective on everything. It made me look much more beautifully at people and less about myself. And so the mission that I wrote down in my prayer journal was the mission of Mission Hope. And the recruiter who was filling the job in 2019 knew me and called me and said, Elisa, there's an organization that has your prayer journal mission, you know, as their mission. I think you ought to apply. And I said, you know, I've looked him up after he talked to me. I said, you know, I'm no Indiana Jones. The guy who started this ministry was like a cross between Billy Graham and Indiana Jones. He would take his Bowie knife and he would throw it at the map in a remote area. And wherever it hit by a river, because he tended to work in places that were close to rivers where they had a lot of river-borne illnesses, et cetera, and remote, he would go and see what their challenges were and then help them. And I mean, one time he was surrounded by a group of cannibals in this tribe in Africa. I mean, the man is fearless. And I'm from Baltimore. Need I say more?
Gotcha.
But here I am anyway,
yeah.
And really privileged. And the board said, why don't you just go to the Dominican Republic first? That's a little easier, less remote.
Mm-hmm.
It's a place that we chose. It was clear that we needed to be there. And we also felt that it would be a kind of a more palatable trek for some of our donors so they could at least see the work. And so I said, yeah, I'll do the DR first. And then I heard about the things going on in Indonesia. And I told the program's leader, I got to go there first. I couldn't believe I was saying it, but I'm glad that I did. So I got that in and a trip to the DR before COVID hit.
Oh, wow. Wow. So, Elisa, this is awesome. And, you know, I do want to, before we take off, obviously COVID is lightening up a little bit, or the conditions around it are lightening up. And I assume that there are opportunities to make trips for folks that are interested in that. So maybe you can address that.
Thank you for asking me that. So yeah. We have a transformation center that we want to build in the Dominican Republic. We were given this land because this amazing couple in Louisiana said, God told us to buy this huge piece of property to have a ministry use to help the people who are struggling in kind of like the northeastern central part of the Dominican Republic in Alto Mayor. And so as they were purchasing the property, one of our guys was going out looking for property where we could build a transformation center and start doing work there and training. And they met and they said, do what you need to do. As long as you're helping these people and sharing the love of Christ, it's yours. So we have a 15-year lease at no cost.
Oh, wow.
With the right to continue after that. So we need to build it. We wanted to build it before COVID hit, but we were just getting to where we had the money to do it. Then COVID hit. Then, of course, donations, you know, diminished a bit. And so that and the restrictions of COVID held us back. And now we're in a place where we would love to have groups, you know, do a little bit of funding and a lot of bit of sweat equity to help us get this transformation done. And we're inviting groups. They can stay on our base camp. We have quaint accommodations. It's kind of a farmland. They can see goats and different things, whether it's a church, whether you're a business and you want to encourage some of your team to be more involved in helping people, fly out, spend 3-4 days or even longer if you want, and you can help us see some of the work and have an amazing time. And if you want, there's some awesome resorts on the east side of the Dominican Republic if you want to do part ministry, part a part vacation too. But yes, thank you for asking. That's one of the most important needs that we have right now, because we can probably serve about 5 times the number of people once we get that center up and running.
Oh, wow. That's compelling. Elisa Goodwin, folks. She is the president and CEO of Mission Hope. So, Elisa, let's get to the most important question. For those that want to be in touch and would like to get connected, how can they do that?
Sure. You can call or email me. My email address is Elisa, E-L-I-S-A, at missionhope.org. And my phone number is 757-846-3770. That's 757-846-3770. Can't say I'll pick up right away because I might think you're trying to sell me something, but if you leave a voicemail, I will call you right back.
If you leave a voicemail and don't mention a warranty, they'll get a return phone call,
exactly.
Right? Yeah, exactly. I love it. missionhope.org is the website, folks. So, Elisa Goodwin, Mission Hope, this has been a pleasure. Thanks so much.
Thank you, John.
Yeah. And folks, just a quick reminder that if you need if you've got administrative tasks or bookkeeping or some other something in your business that's weighing you down, my suggestion is go to officeangels.us and check out the services that they offer. What I really think you need to do if you've got this problem is just call Essie Escobedo directly. She's the owner of Office Angels. She's the chief executive angel there, 770-442-9246. And what she will do is diagnose what your problem is and pick an angel who will fly in, get the job done for you, and fly out. And they'll do it on an ongoing or as-needed basis. And Essie and her team are terrific. And I know that personally because I use her services. And so if you want transformation in your business, thank you, Elisa, for that word. If you want transformation in your business, give Essie a call, 770-442-9246. And now I want to welcome Stacy Georges. And Stacy is with Special Needs Respite. Stacy, welcome.
Thank you so much, John.
Stacy, you are doing some great work in the area of special needs. Talk a little bit about what that involves.
Well, we started Special Needs Respite because I started off as a caregiver taking care of special needs children in the home, and it was just so rewarding, and just seeing the looks on these parents' faces when they came home and they didn't have me calling them every 5 minutes and saying, oh, what do I do? What do I do? I just got a heart for these parents because they just do everything for their children. From the time you get a diagnosis, you try to figure out what's the best treatment, how can we fix this, and all your attention goes into all of that, and they tend to take care of themselves last.
Mm-hmm.
And we all tend to do that, but in this particular incident, then the parents are so exhausted that they can't make those good decisions and find those good treatments, and it's financially and emotionally and physically draining. So as I was working doing that, I realized that a lot of people needed the service, but they couldn't afford it because we were getting hits on the website all the time. You know, we need your service. But as soon as I told them how much it costs, I didn't hear from them again. So I said to my husband, what if I could try and help them raise the money so that they would take care of themselves.
Hmm.
And so we started the nonprofit in 2017, and it has just been a joy to both of us ever since.
Wow. Wow. And there's always so much focus from those of us on the outside on, and rightly so, on that child that has that special need, let's say. And maybe that caregiver, that parent or guardian, what have you, sometimes does get ignored.
Oh, yes. And you see children acting out at grocery stores or, you know, in public, and you think, oh, I would never let my child do that. But the truth is, you don't know the whole story. You don't know what sets that child off. Maybe this is the calm before a storm, and you just don't realize what that parent is going through. So again, I just have such a heart for these people that are, you know, they're just trying to go to Target and get what they need. And they can't just leave. Like when I'm working with a child, I take the child out because he wants to go to Target. Mm-hmm. And then if he lays down on the floor and makes a fit, then I say, now we're going home. But mom has a whole list of things she has to get. And she doesn't have that, you know, luxury of being able to just take them home because I'm there just for the child to have a good time. Mm-hmm. And she has her whole family to take care of.
Sure, sure. Let's talk about some of the, you mentioned one example, a shopping trip, but let's talk about what respite care really is. I mean, let's define some of the ways you provide that care.
Okay. Well, what I tell each of my caregivers is that the number one place for you to get your training is from the parents. They have been through all of it and they will give you the best information. Please do not go in there and say, well, I've read a book on autism or I know about CP. Please listen to the parents because they have tried it all. And I always say, please give the parents credit. Don't come in and say, I saw this on, you know, on 2020, and they said that if you just give your child some more magnesium, that'll cure it. Please just know that they have tried everything and give them a word of encouragement. I can tell that you have done a lot with this young man. He is so full of energy. I don't know how you keep up with him. Something positive that parent can get back from you instead of, if you would just, I know how awful that feels to have either a teacher or a therapist or anyone tell you, if you would just, and you feel like you've tried everything and it's just one more blow.
Wow. That's just such an easy way to help someone, isn't it? Is to give them encouragement, right?
Well, yes. And asking, how can I help?
Yeah. Yeah. Wow. Stacy Georges, folks, she is along with her husband, Tom. We're going to shout him out.
Thank you.
They're the founders of Special Needs Respite. You've got some issues here that you've given me that caregivers run into, and some of what causes them stress and causes them to need your services. You want to talk about some of those?
Well, I'm going to have to guess what you're talking about.
We're talking about sleep deprivation.
Right, exactly.
Loneliness.
Uh-huh.
Right?
Okay.
The ability to, the need to improve their concentration and productivity.
Yes, exactly.
Right?
You gave me an amazing list of things.
Yes,
I thought I would ask you some questions. And the first one is like, what is the first thing that our military forces do to a prisoner of war when they're trying to get them to break down their resistance against questioning?
Deprive them of sleep.
Exactly. So that's my point, is that when the government's using that just to get information, imagine what that does to a parent. They are sleep deprived. They have all these different therapies to go to. Every decision feels like life and death. And what kind of medication am I going to use? Am I going to go for this surgery? Am I going to send him to this special school? It's going to cost so much money. And people will use their 401ks, remortgage their home just to try and help this child. And then when it comes to you know, getting rest for themselves, they don't have any finances left, any funding. So I did mention to you that sleep deprivation does impair your judgment, affects your memory, and eventually breaks down your health, both physical and mental. And here's another one for you. Did you know that loneliness, or in our case, isolation, has the power to shorten people's lives? It's equal to smoking 15 cigarettes a day, and it's equally dangerous to obesity.
Wow.
But here's what we bring to the parents is, according to Psychology Today, here's the power of even a short break. It allows you to reboot your brain and unwind. It helps improve concentration and increases productivity. It provides time for you to think deeply. And that goes back to the decisions, the impacting decisions on these children's lives. It helps you to work through problems more effectively, and it enhances the quality of your relationships. And that's something that I like to bring out too, is that if we look at, you know, there's so many needs, but the very best place for these children is to be raised by their parents, the people that know them best, the people that love them the most. And when the parents get completely burned out, then they end up in the child welfare system. So that's another thing that that energizes me, to feel like if we can help these families stay intact. Unfortunately, John, the divorce rate for couples that have a special needs child is like sometimes 80-85%.
Wow.
Because, well, there's all kinds of reasons, but what happens most often is the mother attacks the, let's research, and the father just tries to keep his job so they have medical insurance, but it drives such a wedge between them with all those decisions, then one of them says, hey, I did not sign up for this. I can't go on like this anymore. So that's another thing that we offer is we just started offering weekends away.
Mm.
And in February, we did it like a Valentine's thing, couples away, and that we did a fundraiser, and we paid for their childcare, and we found this wonderful nonprofit that has a place in North Georgia Mountains. And so she only charges like $50 for Thursday through Sunday.
Oh, wow.
Because she has donors as well.
Okay.
And we pay for the childcare.
Mm-hmm.
So for like $600, you can send a couple away for the weekend. And then in May, we started doing, you know, send mothers away. Now, the mother can decide if she's going to take her husband or not. That's totally up to her.
That's her choice. It's Mother's Day, right?
She can decide that. But anyway, that is so exciting to me to see these people. They send me pictures of them sitting at the fire pit outside with a glass of wine, or they go over to Helen, Georgia and go walking around the Toccoa, the falls are mm-hmm. over there. And I get pictures of couples taking pictures of themselves in front of the falls. So it's very rewarding to see these people be able to relax and just take a break from all this responsibility.
Wow. Stacy Georges, folks. And she is the founder, along with her husband, Tom, founder and executive director of Special Needs Respite. Stacy, let's talk about what you're looking for from folks that are listening to this show, how they the engagement that you like to see from folks that are really interested in the great cause that you represent.
Well, we are very involved with social media, so we have a Facebook page, Special Needs Respite, Inc., and if you follow us on Facebook, you can refer us to your friends, because there's lots of information, encouraging stories of other families that have special needs children, so we love people to tell others that might need our services. We also do a lot of fundraising on Facebook. So you can do a birthday fundraiser for Special Needs Respite, Inc. It's so easy, but people don't even realize that you, right there where it says, what's on your mind, you can click and scroll down, and there's a place where you can do a fundraiser, and all your friends can just give, you know, even a small donation, and it adds up. I mean, we were raising $5,000 last year just from Facebook. And this year, just in the first 4 months, we've raised $6,000.
Oh, wow.
So we're on target to double that this year.
Wow.
Which is really exciting. So I know a lot of people say, I'm getting off Facebook because I don't want to listen to all the debates about politics. Well, that's true. But you can do a lot of good on Facebook, too. If you post a fundraiser and one of your friends has a special needs child, they might not even know about us. And they can go on the same website that you donate at to apply for services. Can we talk about what the government offers?
Yes.
Okay, because that would be my question. If I was listening to this show, I would say, wait, where are my tax dollars and why can't these people get help from them?
Yeah, please.
Well, there is in Georgia, we have the Katie Beckett, and there's a NOW waiver that offers respite care. But unfortunately, it's so difficult to get those services. And that was another thing that motivated me to start this business is because all these people have to, first of all, they have to take a class on how to fill out the application. It is so complicated. Then once they fill out the application, they can actually get approved and then put on a wait list. I've heard people be on the wait list for up to 12 years. So their child is almost 18 by then, right?
Wow.
So one of the things that I feel like, you know, you talked about your moment of when God told you you had to do this. And I felt the same way. I was like, no, God, you've got the wrong person. Stacy doesn't do paperwork. And this is requiring some paperwork. But I told him if he would bring someone alongside me to help me, and he did. So I had no excuse. So what I'm saying now is that we have a very simple application, and people can, it's still, it's a smaller amount of money for sure, but we feel like we could maybe stand in the gap. If somebody has applied, and we always ask them, have you applied for the NOW waiver? And if they say, I don't know about the NOW waiver, we refer them to someone that will tell them how to do it. And then if they say, I've applied and I'm on a waiting list, of course I want those people to get a scholarship. That's why we're here. But we usually give, even if somebody hasn't applied, but the second time they apply, because you can reapply.
Mm-hmm.
You probably want to reapply four times a year to get a full year. Then we say, you know, what have you done to work toward this? So we do want people to get that government money if they can. And while they're waiting, we want to be there for them to fill that gap and give them hope.
Thanks for bringing that up. That's a great explanation. And there's flexibility in what you offer. I mean, that's kind of the one of the key words there too, right?
Well, it's always more flexible if you have a smaller company than a government bureaucracy.
Oh, come on.
But
come
don't get me started about that.
I'm shocked to hear that. But
yeah, we had a time like during COVID. Oh, that was an amazing story. This one particular woman that had gotten scholarship from me, she was just so grateful. She always was volunteering. And, you know, of all the people that we've helped, very few say, oh, how can I help you? So anyway, she gave me a call while we were in COVID. And she said, oh, Miss Stacy, I am so sick. I can't even get off the couch. And she has a 20-year-old nonverbal, I would say moderate to severe autistic child. So he can't even make a peanut butter sandwich. And she's on the couch.
Mm.
And so we just me personally and my assistant, we sent her some, you know, of that Grubhub or something where they drop off on your doorstep so she didn't have to cook. And then the next week she called me and said, oh, Stacy, you're so great. You know, she was always telling me how wonderful I was, but we all need one of those, right? And anyway, she said, why don't you use my story for publicity? I was like, okay. So I called Channel 2 and Mike Pechenik got her on TV for us. And she was telling all the other moms, ask for help, ask for help. Well, we set up a GoFundMe because our nonprofit is really supposed to pay for respite care and we're sensitive to that.
Mm-hmm.
But we did a GoFundMe and then some people donated to her specific cause and we were able to help her pay for her rent. Because of course she couldn't work and help her with, you know, her food and everything. The community just came out and surrounded her and it was just such a beautiful thing. So that's an example of not exactly providing respite care, but when the need is there, we can be somewhat flexible.
Well, that's a wider definition of respite care, right?
Okay.
You're right.
Okay. Will you come to the audit with me and say that?
I am delighted to help you make the case for that.
Okay, thanks, John.
Because if you're not around and you're not in a house, you know the respite care goes out the window. You know, so you've got to be around, right, to be able to.
Yeah, if we would have come into her house, we probably would have. The caregiver would have gotten COVID, right?
Yeah, so, sure. It makes perfect.
Bad.
Yeah, it makes perfect sense to me. Well, Stacy, this is awesome work that you're doing. And let's talk about how I mean, I'm, as Elisa said about Mission Hope, obviously you're looking for financial donations, and we can talk about how people can do that, but there may be other ways they can help you as well. Maybe volunteer opportunities.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. We just got a new board. I want to call them the power board, because we just regrouped, and the people that I have on the board are amazing. We have a former city councilman. We have someone who actually teaches people how to fill out the NOW waiver. So she's on there, and she's a doer. Oh, my goodness. And we have professional executives. So if whatever it is that you love to do, we could probably use you in your professional capacity. Mm-hmm. So, you know, we've got someone that's just very detail oriented and does HR work, but she's amazing with helping us keep track of what did we say during that meeting and what are we going to do with our logos, et cetera. So we have always opportunities for marketing and communications and graphic arts and just about anything you would want to do. So you can go on our website, the same one. I say that all the time, but it's not complicated. You go on specialneedsrespite.org and it says, how can we help, or how can you help? And then there's also a one for partnering major businesses. Mm-hmm. Like Radio X could get his picture up on our website. So every time somebody makes a donation or applies, they would see your business if you wanted to partner with us.
Awesome. Awesome. And folks can donate, I assume, through the website as well.
Mm-hmm. You can donate through the website. There's a big button. I try and make it as simple as possible. My husband is our technical guy, but I'm the one that can't hardly order anything online. So I am the test case. If I can't get through the website, then we have to make it simple. Well, I've got a button that says get help.
Gotcha.
Let's make it as simple as possible. So that's our plan.
Got it. And specialneedsrespite.org is the website. Why don't you give other coordinates for people that want to get in touch? Maybe they're not happy with just the website. They want to talk to you live.
Okay. I know. Elisa gave her phone number, and that is very brave of you.
Well, you can give an email.
Okay.
Yeah.
My email is stacy.georges@gmail.com, which should be pretty easy for people to remember. And it's George with an S, like Curious George.
There you go. Stacy Georges, folks, with Special Needs Respite. Stacy, this has been great. Thank you for your work and for coming on the show.
Well, thank you for providing this platform where we can tell people about it.
Absolutely. It's our great pleasure. Folks, just a speaking of engaging with us and connecting, here's what my bold ask of you is. Go to your favorite podcast platform, that may be Apple, Google, Spotify, whatever it is, and search for North Fulton Business Radio. Subscribe to the show. And here's my bold ask. Give us a 5-star review. It's not about me. It's not about Business Radio X. It's about our guest. And you've heard two great guest with two great causes here that they represent, and it helps people find the show and find out about the good work that they do. So can't make the case any stronger than what these two ladies have done here today. So if you could help them and our other guests in that way, we'd greatly appreciate it. You can connect with us on social media. We're at North Fulton BRX is the search term. We're on LinkedIn, Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and probably one or two other things that I don't know about. But check us out on any of those platforms. So for my guest, Elisa Goodwin and Stacy Georges, I'm John Ray. Join us next time here on North Fulton Business Radio.